everybody loves a night out, whether it's seeing your favorite band in person or maybe being there in the crowd to cheer on your favorite team. Well, with the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program, you can go to the concert or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code ESPN25 for 10% off your next order.
What the going rate for a 94-footer is these days, and when that's not enough, hold on a second, the going rate for emergency starting and beating the Toronto Maple Leafs. We've got the legend of Dave Ayers here.
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous that was zero. The Islanders are paying Rick DiPietro $1.5 million for the next decade. Get that guy a game check.
So confused.
He, by the way, was from 94-footer with the highlight throw? Get out of here.
We're going to get to that in a second. We're going to start with refereeing in the NBA. I'm not sure if this has ever come up on the show before. Maybe you saw, make a call on this play, all right? This is a big play from Sunday. And also, are you giving a technical foul to Brad Stevens to basically decide the game here? Whether it's referee's will, God's will. God's will what, Jason Tatum? Okay, Saturday night. Let's dive right in here, okay? Make a call here, Tim Kalishaw. These are your Mavericks. I know you want to make a call here. It was inadvertent whistle is what the call was at the end. Silver has to hear the appeal of the Mavericks, and then he's going to have to handle Mark Cubaning, both on the court for the game and trolling on Twitter, yada, yada, yada. Tim, point blank, does the NBA have a refereeing crisis or a Cuban crisis?
A little bit of a Cuban crisis today. I mean, I think through the magic of HDTV and multiple replays, every sport that we talk about has a little bit of a crisis. It's not like we never talk about NFL officiating on Monday afternoons here. But, I don't watch every NBA game and say that's a travesty. In this particular game, the Mavs are called for goaltending. They go and look at it, and basically it said, okay, it's not a goaltending, but the Hawks scored right after. Let's make it an inadvertent whistle and count those 2 points. I don't think there's anything in the rule book that can possibly allow the officials to do that. So I understand Cuban going a little bit nuts. Maybe he went a little more than a little bit nuts. He hasn't done that in a while.
He hasn't. I mean, it's been incredible restraint. Maybe it's because the team hasn't exactly been where they were a decade ago. But to say this has been a problem in the NBA for 20 years, 2 decades, like he did, Tim Kalishaw, and dredging all that up, how do you think Silver hears that?
That's what's going to get him fined or whatever they come up with. But he really doesn't care. He's never cared about the fines. He's cared about calling attention to things that he thinks need to be fixed. Maybe he thinks it's worse than it is. I don't know.
Clinton Yates, specifically Cuban, bringing up how referees are brought into the league and how they're trained by the referees that he believes are initially the problem and the 20 years of the problems. What do you think Silver hears in that?
What he's saying is that the referees in the NBA is an old boys club, and they got to figure out how to modernize themselves so that the guys that are actually doing the officiating know how to work something as basic as a replay system. And so to that point, I can understand why he's so frustrated, because he's been saying this kind of thing for a while. But he actually makes sense, except for the way that he delivers it has so much blather that nobody wants to take him seriously. It is not that big of a deal in the context of just one game. But if he really wants to address, as an owner in the league, what's happening with referee development, do it on your own time. This is an actual issue, because the guys don't actually know how to properly manage the rules because the new replay system is messing them up. But overall, do you really need to protest the game? You're going to play 9.4, whatever it is, more seconds, and possibly lose a jump ball? And then
well, that's a different question. I mean, we've done this before. There was the Harden dunk earlier in the year, right? Wasn't it Harden? And yeah. I mean, yep. It's just like we get to a place where the appeals are always denied and we move on. But Frank Isola, if you could separate Mark Cuban from the fact that someone's lodging a complaint about the refereeing in the league.
Well, you know, Clinton said old boys club. I think part of the problem is there's a lot of neophytes, male and female. I had an NBA coach tell me before the season he thought the officiating this year would not be that good. You have a lot of young and inexperienced referees. The problem here, though, was the way that they applied the rule. Once the whistle blew, that's where everything should have stopped. And Rodney Mott, the referee, told the pool reporter after the game, well, it was an inadvertent whistle, but we let it continue. No, no, no. That's where the game should have stopped. And in the NBA's last two-minute report, they did not determine anything there. All they said is that there's a protest. So I don't think the NBA, as of this moment, has an explanation because, believe it or not, they got that one wrong. See, they applied the rule wrong.
That's what you took away from that because it wasn't in the two-minute report. It suggests the NBA has no idea what's going on here. Israel Gutierrez, exactly. How about you?
Well, the review, as it was explained, they say they told you the rule. They said, hey, inadvertent whistle because he was in his motion. We're going to let that one go. The mistake here was the whistle being blown, not the replay, right? So it is an official making an error at a poor time. Because if there was no review and that would have gone as a if that would have been a mistake, then that would have been on the 2-minute report have been, oh, official error. But when they went to review, they kind of fixed it. And Mark Cuban just, you know, he went Mark Cuban on us. And, Tony, I'm surprised you didn't go Cuban whistle crisis there. I thought you were going to do that. But I think Mark Cuban chose this time to go over the top. I don't think there are a bunch of, a bunch of people, better referees, clamoring down people's doors to try to be there, whether it's training that's different, whether it's the way they select them that's different. There's always going to be some human error, and there was a mistake on that.
Is that something you want to add?
Yeah, look, if you're going to sit Luka and Kristaps and you're not going to win a game, you're not going to get that upset about it. But overall, what I'm saying is that I don't have that much of a problem with the call. It's sort of like when somebody gets fouled on the sideline and you just give the other team the ball.
And Frank Isola.
The end result was fine.
Well, and Clinton is right about that. Bad calls happen every game. By the way, Luka Doncic is sixth in the league in free throw attempts. He's a second-year player. I'm sure opposing teams don't like that he's constantly going to the free throw line. And Mark Cuban going on the court, that's where he's crossing the line. You're an owner. Forget about going on Twitter. What are you doing on the court yelling at the referees during the game? That's crossing the line.
We've been horned. We'll move on. Let's address Friday's panel. Who was on Friday's panel? Tim Kalish, I believe you were. Frank Isola, I believe you were too. Don't shake your head, no. The panel was 0-for-4 on Fury Wilder. So, much like Fury was licking the wounds, you're going to be licking your wounds today, Kalish and Isola. Wilder was bleeding from the head and from the ear when his corner called for it to stop in the 7th. Clinton, what type of night did boxing have?
I thought they had a better night than most people might have considered, considering who the winner was. Now, overall, I think a lot of people thought that Wilder was the person that was going to win this fight, obviously, from this panel. Him being an American, people thought was going to be a big deal. But overall, you got a pretty good fight. You got a pretty good knockdown. You got a controversial ending. You got a weird meme moment with the entrances. And you got some guy licking blood. I mean, I don't know what people are expecting from boxing, but that was an entertainment.
You said controversial ending. You don't think that the fight should have been called?
In the notion of Well, they were, trying to figure out who was throwing the towels and whether or not they were doing that. There's still talk about that now. My point is that there was discussion around it that wasn't just one punch or the other. You had a lot of different things there, and that is what the
I see is. Tim Kalishaw on deck, but he could not predict this fight. Neither could Isola. I'm not sure if I brought that up. Let's go to Israel Gutierrez.
Well, thank you. I actually thought the first fight was a little bit better for boxing because it left both of these guys sort of at the top, of the sport where you had, oh man, what's going to happen in this rematch because it was obviously a draw. This one, it just looked like Tyson Fury was the better fighter and it was interesting because everybody said, hey, Deontay Wilder, all he needs is to catch him once like he did in that first fight before, Fury got up like a zombie there. But, it didn't feel like, Wilder was threatened by Fury at all in this fight until he got hit and then he got hurt and then it was like, oh wow, he can't knock me out possibly here. And so, and I thought it was obvious once he broke his, busted his eardrum, he was off balance and you pretty much were going to lose that fight regardless.
Yeah, that tends to happen.
Tyson Fury is way up here right now and these other two fighters, Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder are notch below. And I think it's good for Tyson Fury. I'm not sure how great it is for boxing to just have the one guy at top.
Tim Kalishaw, what type of night is this for boxing?
Okay, the only thing I was really guilty of Friday was listening to too much Teddy Atlas and Max Kellerman. That swayed my opinion. I was thinking, Fury got knocked down by Wilder last time and he got up. He knows he can recover. What happens if it goes the other way? But, so I was kind of torn.
Oh, yeah.
I was leaning toward Wilder, sort of like that building in downtown Dallas is leaning one way. It doesn't completely fall down. And, I made a little mistake. But I think for the heavyweight division to have a fight of this magnitude and this appeal, it's a pretty good night for boxing.
Pretty good. Okay, how about you, Frank Isola?
The mistake I made was listening to Tim, who was listening to Max and listening to Teddy Adams. But Izzy, there's no way that Izzy was saying that a draw was good for boxing. What they did this weekend, that was great for boxing. This is the heavyweight division, and believe it or not, the fight actually lived up to the hype. How often does that happen in any of these boxing matches? This was a great night. You got a guy who's really eccentric. A lot of people don't like him. He's from a different country, beating the American. That night was great for boxing. It was a terrific
fight. I don't know, Israel. I never saw Wilder's legs being underneath him the entire fight. Maybe because he was pacing around too much while Fury was sitting on his throne pre-fight. Yeah. But it just seemed like something was off.
That costume he was wearing into the ring was weighing him down.
We move on. Best story in the show, Dave Ayers. Let's go. Say his name. Dave Ayers, the first emergency goalie ever to win, according to Sportsnet. Carolina 6, Toronto 3. When he let up the goals in the first two shots, it was probably a little sweaty in the pads of that 42-year-old former Zamboni driver. But he stopped the next eight shots. Shots from Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and Jason Spezza. Per the contract he signed minutes before, it was a tryout. He gained $0 for this. $0 is what he got. Got to keep his jersey. Frank, is that enough for the legend of Dave Ayers?
It is absolutely absurd. That should be $10,000 for appearing in an NHL game. I love this story, but I'm going to have to be the hater on this panel. It's crazy that you just don't use a player on your own roster to go in goal. And it makes it look like what we always say about hockey when we watch it. When they say save, no, the puck just happened to hit him. He was just standing
Whoa. Wait, I thought you meant crazy, crazy good, like crazy. This is the greatest thing in all of sports. All sports should.
I love the story.
Doesn't sound like it. Israel Gutierrez.
Oh, you're going to get more from me here. I'm with Frank. There are very few moments in my sports career where I feel like my head was going to explode. And hearing this is
your
like,
sports
what?
Career?
This is a rule? He can play for either team, Tony. He's the emergency goalie for either team.
He was,
like, what?
He was Toronto.
Why not put a mannequin in goal with a little bit of a robot?
Oh, wait, it's another mute. Tim Kalishaw, how about you?
I will acknowledge this, that if you lose two quarterbacks in an NFL game, you don't go over to the guy with the first down marker and say, did you play junior college football?
Thank you.
It does have an odd look.
Funny.
But having checked with my NHL sources, you can't just ask a defenseman to go put on the backup goalie's equipment. Equipment is very specific, especially the mask. You're better off with a guy who has his own equipment.
Now you're going into the fine print of it all. Clinton, is this not one of the greatest things in sports?
Yes.
Thank you.
Let me be clear. I am on Team E-Bug, emergency backup goalie. I live for this stuff. This is the best thing about hockey that they still do. It's not like they're not players. He trains with the minor league team. He knows what he's doing.
Man.
And the other point Frank, is that the opportunity cost of taking an actual player off the ice to do something like that and potentially get hurt, when you're on the third goalie and two other guys have gotten hurt, you're not going to hurt an actual skater in a game. That's why you bring in a random
Frank,
person.
I'll give you the last word.
Tony, what does it say about Austin Matthews? You couldn't put the puck past him. But in baseball, what happens when you lose both your catchers? You have to put somebody else in. It's about roster management.
It's so great.
I love this story.
It would be so great to put somebody out of the stands. Oh, this is amazing.
I'm torn.
Carolina's still paying Alexander Semin. I mean, he hasn't played in years. They're still paying him like $1 million a year. Please.
Get him out there.
Game check.
All right.
You're worried about the money.
Before we break, we'd like to take a moment here to acknowledge everything at the Staples Center today, the Kobe Bryant Memorial, the tribute to Kobe and Gianna. I've said it in the last month. It's okay to be affected by the passing of someone you don't know personally. To be affected by someone's passing is compassion in its most pure form, to suffer with, quite literally, the root. And that continues to be the feeling I have, but also more so this, the heart hurts. The heart hurts. Watching Vanessa Bryant today honoring her husband, eulogizing her daughter. The strength she showed immeasurable. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Welcome back to Around the Horn, brought to you by Chase. Coming to you from the Seaport District at Pier 17.
The week where everybody lost. Down goes Baylor. Down goes Gonzaga. Down goes San Diego State. Kansas is going to be earning that number one in the nation this week. It should be noted we had a panel on Friday who predicted games. Tim Kalish. Oh, this is just a tough Monday for you. Oh. Frank Isola got the game right there. A couple points for the Iceman. Clinton, your takeaway, 3 weeks away from Selection Sunday.
As much as Kansas proved that they're probably the best team in the nation, I still think the San Diego State loss is going to be more important to the bracketology. Not only did they lose to an unranked team, they lost at home after being undefeated. That, to me, loses them, moves them off the one line, perhaps, if Duke can move on.
TC?
Baylor-Kansas result was really inconsequential. I wouldn't focus on that so much. I would agree that the San Diego State game were a team that's not going to play a top 25 team all season, and you really don't know what to do with them. They win all their games. They put up a banner before the game. They won the regular season. That seemed to cost them against a team that lost 14
Now,
times.
I recognize it was a jibe there with Kansas-Baylor because you picked the game wrong, but you're also saying they're going to meet again in the Big 12, and there's plenty of more
They'll
seasons.
They'll play again. They're both going to be one seeds.
Israel Gutierrez, how about you?
I'd like to put the focus right back on that Kansas-Baylor game because I believe that that was very telling. If they were to meet again, especially when Udoka Azubuike was unstoppable, especially down the stretch there. I think they're 18-1 in his career when he had the double-double. There's the formula. It'll get you through the tournament. You're good.
Frank Isola.
Tony, with Gonzaga losing, had San Diego State won, they could have been the number one seed out west, and the regional is played in L.A., so they lost more than a basketball game this week, and that really sets them back.
We'll move on. Buy or sell two, the Astros. Stealing signs again. Not exactly. But if Houston asterisks and other so-called heckling signs, I believe two were reported. Two at the first spring training game. If that's too much, what are we talking about here? Today, Altuve played in a game, got a little booze from the fans in Detroit's home spring park. Tim, are you beginning to question whether the Astros are playing this one right?
Question everything about the Astros. Let people have, let the fans have their say. Unless they're using foul language or something truly offensive. Houston asterisks, that you're going to take that sign away from some guy. Everybody in the world has said that. Just let the people talk.
Real?
All right. You can live through it.
Honestly, how much protection do these players need? They're getting it from Manfred. Why do they need to be protected from fans with clever signs? There are people who didn't cheat who are getting the sign treatment everywhere else in all of sports, and they're not being taken away. That's ridiculous.
It's possible the Usher staff doing more than Manfred. Frank Isola, how about you?
You know, the only thing is, the NBA did this with the people who were in support of Hong Kong after the fiasco in China, and we really haven't heard that much about it since then. So I think the Astros are trying to silence everybody, but I don't think it's going to work, not in baseball.
Glenn Yates.
If they're freaking out like this in spring training, I got something to show you because the regular season is going to be a whole lot worse for this team and every place in America. You have to let people do what they want. That's the whole reason they're showing up. They're allowed to do that. That's how they're paid.
All right, national panel, put up your hands. It's hand season. Here we go. We do this all the time. Buy or sell three.
Big.
NFL combine time. Hand measurements and Joe Burrow coming in 9 inches. Tua and Justin Herbert measuring 10 inches. According to ESPN stats and information, yes, somebody is keeping this stat. The Burrow number of 9 inches tied for the smallest among what would become first-round quarterbacks measured at the combine since 2008. Israel, what are you doing with that information?
I mean, I'm wondering if Joe Burrow chose number 9 because he measured his hand before he got into college and he's just throwing it in your face. I don't do any information with the hand size of these quarterbacks because it doesn't really mean anything to me. This is all just, you know, it's fodder for these shows, and I'm sorry.
Right, guys, Solo?
Hand size is a political issue. Keep it out of sports. It doesn't belong there. This guy's got a huge heart. He won important games on the road. Give me a break. I could see with my eyes that he's a big-time player.
Yeah, the only stat that matters to me is that this guy is 2 years older than Lamar Jackson, which means that when he gets in the league, he's probably going to be pretty, you know, well-versed
just 1 month older than
grown
Jackson.
Man, basically.
Tim?
Go ask the Oklahoma and Clemson defensive backs what they think about Joe Burrow's small hands. They'll tell you. They still work pretty good.
That's right.
Patrick Mahomes' hand, a quarter of an inch bigger. There's your difference.
Oh, there's the difference.
There we go.
Yep.
There's your difference.
Tim Kalishaw, Frank Isola. Isola did a good job to get it into double digits here. Kalishaw, you're not going to love this in your scoring average for the season. Clint Yates is
Gutierrez.
Showdown. 2 minutes.
Oh, look, it's my hands.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy.
Glenn Yates, Israel Gutierrez, good luck in showdown. Actual Euros are jealous of this Harden Euro step. Clinton, legal or illegal? Make a call. Is it a walk?
I'm going to say that this is legal, but only because from that angle, the back angle, it looks real. And he demonstrates it perfectly. This is how you do it.
It's legal because it's legal, and James Harden has perfected that. And I don't really have a problem with that. It's more the flailing when he gets touched on a three-pointer that I have a problem with. Taking advantage of the actual rules, no problem.
I'm in agreement with you guys. I mean, was there anything ever more Eurostep than that? That's outstanding. We'll move on. Showdown two, the legend of Mason Saunders. Do you know Mason Saunders? He's a rodeo savant. One event in December, $26,000 in cash. Maybe you don't know the name because you know him by his other name, Madison Bumgarner. Zach Buchanan and Andrew Baggerly, the Athletic, with the scoop here. Israel, how do you think the D-backs should feel about this?
I mean, they probably shouldn't take this away from him. If he's been doing this his whole life, it's, you know, it's Madison Bumgarner. He's going to need this in his life. But of the two names, Madison Bumgarner.
The funny thing
like
about this
one,
is, if you just had blind identities and you said one guy was named Madison Bumgarner and the other guy was named Mason Saunders, you'd think Bumgarner was the dude in the rodeo. That's how funny that name is.
I think his biggest mistake, bigger than telling the Athletic, was actually picking the name Saunders. Point to Yates. You're right on that. We'll move on. Showdown three. Three-pointers for partial tuition. You've seen this before. Half quarters for cash money. The Knicks give away coupons when you hit a three-quarter shot. But this 94-footer got a Montana State student $11,111. So we're going to show that down next to putting from full court. 94 feet here again. You get an 86-year-old fan, a Nissan Altima. Clinton, what's the better use of 94 feet?
It's got to be the college kid. $11,000 for him is worth a lot more than a Nissan Altima is to that young lady. But also, what is that highlight throw? How did he manage to get that down? How do you practice that? I can't believe I even went in.
How is $11,000 worth more than a car that's worth more than $11,000, Clinton? I don't understand that math.
Because when you drive it off the lot, it depreciates immediately. Do you know how cars work? You drive it off the lot, it depreciates immediately.
Israel Gutierrez, what do I have to do to get you into this brand new 30 seconds of FaceTime?
Nothing at all. Just send the confetti.
There it is.
I would like to spend my time asking Tim Kalishaw what his favorite part was of the three-day Dwayne Wade retirement ceremony. Was it when LeBron James sent a personal message? Was it when he was on stage rapping with Rick Ross? Was it the second day, perhaps, when he had the actual ceremony?
All
Maybe
right.
The third day.
All right. Let Mr. Kalishaw respond. Please, Tim.
I'm torn between the Dwayne Wade documentary and the Dwayne Wade live-action short and the Dwayne Wade
All right, we're done.